This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, welcome to Hour 2 as we roll along this morning. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll get back into the NFL, some more games to dissect. But this is the time of the year where we've got a lot of things coming at us at once in the sports world. We talked about college football in hour number one with the firing of Carl Durrell at Colorado and Paul Chryst yesterday. Now five people have already lost their jobs before in the first month of the college football season. But we've also got baseball because the Mets went down to Atlanta and boy, oh boy, did they get ripped apart. And now the Mets are back in New York. They've got a three-game series coming up against Washington. And they find themselves two games back of the Braves in the division. What a horrific weekend for the Mets. It wasn't that they lost all three games. It's that they didn't play well at all in any of those games. And so now when you're starting to see this start to take shape a little bit, congratulations to the Mariners clinching a playoff berth and all of that. It is going to be analyzed how well you're playing at this particular point. And I think for the Mets, who have had such a great season, right, just rolling along, Buck Showalter, everything seemed to come into place. They got Jacob DeGrom back in July. Max Scherzer was put on the IR, but then came back, and then really trying to rest themselves up as they get ready for the postseason. But the reality of it is that sometimes, even when you're a fan of a team, a little bit of that creeps back in, right? That little fear of, we're going to resort to back to what made me so disappointed. And I wonder how much of that is on Mets fans right now. That in the end, the other shoe was going to drop at some point. They knew it. They were hoping it wouldn't, but they always knew in the back of their head that it would fall. Did it fall this weekend in Atlanta? Maybe it falls when they get into the wild card round and they lose that. But did it fall this weekend in Atlanta? This is a great time of the year. I mean, it really is. And just to have all of these things come together. But you as a fan, you start dividing your attention into things that really matter to you. So if you're a Jets fan, let's say, watching the Jets go on and win that game. If you're a Mets fan, also understanding that your team is losing and not, losing to Atlanta and also losing the National League East lead. So much of our attention is being kind of tossed around at this point. That's one of the reasons why October is the best month for sports. All right, when we come back, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. And then we'll dive into other games in the NFL. How good is Cooper Rush? And should Dallas Cowboys be excited about the return of Dak Prescott now that Cooper Rush is 3-0 as a starter? All right, we'll continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb time as we get you going on your Monday. And what a weekend it was, full of stuff. How much stuff? How much good? How much bad? How much dumb? Let's find out. What's the good of the day?
Well, I mean, there's so much stuff. I decided to do two goods of the day.
All right.
Because why not? It's a Monday. You kind of need the cheering up.
Yeah.
The first good of the day, I got to give it to the Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Yesterday, the St. Louis Cardinals, the baseball Cardinals, not the Arizona football kind. Yesterday, during their final game at Busch Stadium of the year, they took out Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina, and Adam Wainwright all at the same time.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Gave those three guys a hero's walk-off,
But I know it's a good, but all teams do this. Like
right.
Mariano Rivera, when he was taken out,
I know the Yankees did it.
So
yeah.
This was planned that they were going to do something like this in that final game. But it is still good when you see it.
It is, and it's amazing. I mean, when you think about just what those three have accomplished, and it almost feels like, we've never heard of them. Or heard of what they accomplished. I didn't know until this year that Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina were that dynamic of a duo.
Yeah.
They've played that many games together. That was surprising to me.
It was really, really awesome.
And then, for Pujols, I think it was Bob Nightingale had posted it, that his first at-bat at Busch Stadium was a home run, and his last at-bat at Busch Stadium was a home run.
That's wild. That is so incredible. Yeah. Like, it's really hard for me to sort of process his career knowing it started like before my son was born.
Yeah.
Right? Who's now a junior in college. It's like, but it's
Tom
like
Brady had.
Brady is like, the same thing.
Well, it was something like weird. Like Tom Brady had only completed four passes.
Yeah.
At that moment, or uh-huh. not even, I hadn't started a game or something. It was something weird.
Well, yeah, because he was on the Patriots, but he didn't emerge as the guy
yeah.
until the fall of 2001, and that's when Pujols was rocking and rolling already in April of 2001. So yeah, while Brady was still in the league, he wasn't Brady yet. So we've had Albert Pujols hitting home runs through the entire Brady life that we know of as fans, not necessarily career wise, but as what we know of. Really just, it is remarkable. I mean, and when we see things and we celebrate the anniversary of this or the anniversary of that, it's like Pujols has been a baseball player through all of that, much like Brady is in the NFL. It's really, really wild. But, yeah, it was good to see. Again, tied Babe Ruth for the most RBIs. I mean, that's
yeah
great, Jack. Wonderful, wonderful. It's great. All right, what's the second good of the day?
Second good of the day. Now, hear me out on this one. I might upset football guy with this, but I didn't see a problem with it. But Syracuse took on Wagner this weekend.
Right.
And Syracuse went up big. They were actually 49-0 at the half, and they weren't having any issues at all. Both teams' coaches, or I don't know who, convened and decided to play 10-minute quarters in the second half.
I have a real question. I'm going to look it up. You probably don't know, but is this the same Wagner that is the school in Staten Island?
Maybe.
Like, I'm going to look this up right now. My cousin went to Wagner, but you know how sometimes there's a Wagner in,
yeah.
No, that's not the Wagner. This is the Wagner in Michigan, or this is the Wagner in Pennsylvania. So I want to make sure it's the same Wagner. How in the world, look, When you schedule games against these schools where you get paid, there's usually like a one drop off, right? Like you go from FBS to FCS.
Yeah.
What the hell is Wagner doing playing Syracuse?
I don't know.
What division are they?
Looks like the team competes in the NCAA Division I Football Championship Subdivision.
They do?
Yeah.
What?
And they. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and they're in Staten Island. You're
right. Staten Island. Okay, that's what my cousin.
Staten Island team.
They're the Seahawks.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So they're in the Northeast Conference.
Yeah,
and now I'm looking it up.
You know, you were talking about coaches being fired earlier. I don't know what Tom Mosella, what magic ball he has. It's his third season, and he's 0-14.
My goodness gracious! So, all right. So Northeast Conference. I think that has. All right. Here's the schools that are in their division, in their conference. LIU, Central Connecticut, Duquesne, Sacred Heart, Merrimack, Stonehill, St. Francis. What in God's name? And I mean, you're getting paid, but Syracuse should be like, I think we can find another kind of opponent.
Right.
Like, I'm glad you want the money, but someone's going to get killed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And that's why I when I heard that they were doing 10-minute quarters, I was like, you know what? Yeah. I mean,
running clock and everything like that.
What fun is this going to be for not only the other team, but then, yeah, you risk injuries.
See, I've always been told, like, I can remember when I was in Charleston, South Carolina, Charleston Southern played Florida. And I remember going, guys, this is, why are you scheduling Florida? I know you need the money, but like, this is dangerous. But then, you know, the coach came on our show and was like, you know, for my kids, this, they'll never, ever, ever play in a stadium like that, ever. Like, we play in like bleachers. They're just kind of strung together. And I was like, all right, I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, it's almost outside of the money. It's like a big waste of time. Like, it's like other than risk. I don't know. Maybe as I'm getting older, I'm getting more cynical with this kind of thing where I'm just like, eh. But that's all that was so your kids can play in the dome and get their butts kicked by bigger, stronger, faster athletes. 59-0, and you have to go with a 10-minute quarter practical running clock so things could be things. What, so Syracuse doesn't score 100? Like, why are you doing that? Because this was, you could see this a mile away. But yeah, so I heard people couldn't get money off the bets. If you had a bet on Syracuse, that bet was nulled and you got your money back because they went to the 10-minute course. It wasn't even a complete game.
Oh, really? I didn't see that. Yeah.
Well, my good friend Darren Rovell, who tweets everything gambling, had that point this weekend. That and ticket collectibles and NFTs.
Yes.
Like, my favorite tweets are, Bored Ape with Party Hat sold for $1.3 million 5 years ago. It is sold for $800,000 yesterday. Bored Ape with Red Party Hat sold for, right? That's kind of his thing. So, but yeah, that's, so Wagner out of Staten Island got a Syracuse game at the Dome.
Yep.
God bless him. Syracuse got ranked out of that.
Yeah.
They went 4-0 unranked. They beat Wagner 59-0. Now they're ranked 22nd in the poll.
That's how it works.
That's how it works, college football. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. There was a huge cheating scandal over the weekend, Tony.
I followed this as much as I possibly could with my limited understanding of it.
This might be one of the best cheating scandals I've ever watched video of, read up on it. I mean, literally, I could not get enough of this. But if you missed it, you're missing out.
Right.
In the competitive fishing world, championship duo Chase Kaminsky and Jake Runyon were caught cheating in probably, I guess, one of the biggest tournaments in fishing right now. I don't know fishing tournaments.
I don't understand fishing, so try to help me explain how this went down.
So what they were doing, I mean, you go and you catch a bunch of fish and you have your keepers. And then since you have your keepers, you go and you get them weighed in. And when they weigh them in, you know, it's all depending on how much weight there was, and that's how you win. And they've won a lot of prizes. And I think this one tournament might have been like a $100,000 prize, which blew me away that you can have that much in fish. But, hey, you know, I mean, I guess it makes sense. They had been suspected of cheating before. In fact, they even failed a polygraph. And in this particular incident, I still don't know what caused someone to do this. But they were able to discover that they were stuffing weights in the fish. Not only weights, but they were also sticking fish fillets in the fish as well. Like,
oh my God.
Finding like extra meat and just maybe some of the non-keepers.
Slicing
it up and stuffing it down the fish's mouth. I think what happened was one of the weights was visible in the mouth and somebody was like, hey, what's that?
Okay, so this is where I got not confused, but just a little like my thing went off, right? So one of the other sports that I kind of know about is motorsports, where cheating is, you know, as part of motorsports as you can get. So like when I first started covering NASCAR and I started hearing about things that teams did back in the old days, right? They would put weight, they'd have a weighted brick, they would, you know, all sorts of things. NASCAR was smart. They're like, we're right with you. We know what you're doing. Like, we know the tricks.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a casino hiring a cheat. Or a bank hiring a bank robber, right? To show them
test out their systems,
break into our vault and tell us where we're at fault, right? NASCAR did the same thing. They grabbed the old day cheats back in the 50s and 60s, and they were like, "This is what you want to see." I thought stuffing a fish for weight would be something you'd go, "Well, we're obviously going to check for that."
I mean, I guess
like that's old hat. They've been doing that since the 1800s in fishing tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, don't you just use one of those metal wands?
Yeah, like whoop, whatever. Whoop, like whoop. You would just go, you'd check, you'd find a way. Like it would be the number one in a thing of where weight matters. You would go, well, obviously we want to check to see if you didn't shove anything down the fish's mouth. So when I saw that, I went, they don't do that on a regular basis?
Now, did you see some of the weights being pulled up? Like one of them, this one weight looked like it was like a pound and a half or something.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I saw that. Yeah, that was crazy. Crazy.
But yeah. And then the, you know, stuffing it with fish fillet I thought was awesome too.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, we'll just stuff it with more fish.
Unreal. Fishing scandals, man.
But I mean, it's huge. It's big money.
It is. Have you ever been to one of those? Not really been to one of those. You ever seen one of those like on TV or whatnot? Like one night I was just doing the dance around and I saw a fishing tournament. And I could not believe the sponsors that were attached to this thing. I went, this is what it's all about, right? I mean, you go, these professional guys with their boats and jackets and shirts with all the sponsors on it. If you're involved in fishing at all, if you sell anything fishing, you are jumping on these things. And it's a ripe audience for advertising. It was incredible. Really wild stuff. And people are into it, man. They are into that kind of thing. Hey, loved it. So what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day is to everyone out there who feels the need to make fun
of DK Metcalf taking a cart to the locker room.
Oh, God. I say God bless him.
Yeah. Yeah, we've all been in that situation. We've all been down that road. And sometimes you just need to sit down and take a ride or, you know, you're going to have an issue.
You know what they were saying?
It could be more embarrassing.
And I don't know. I've never been to Ford Field, but they say that the distance is incredibly long to get to the locker room.
I can believe it.
Like they said, it's a good little ways. So taking a cart, an injury cart, where it made people go, what's wrong with him? Oh, he's got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Made people, you know. But he is, do it if you can.
Hey, when you got to go, you got to go.
When you got to go, you got to go, man.
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, you know, a lot of the memes and stuff were kind of funny, too. But
and I like the way he just totally admitted that they're, you know,
oh, yeah.
the walk wasn't going to be pleasant, wasn't going to make it.
And that's the relatable part.
That's the relatable part.
I think we've all been there. Like, that walk is like, oh, no, I can't do it today.
Yeah. My wife can spot me doing that like a mile away. She goes, oh, you got to use the restroom? I go, yeah, can we get out of this store for a second? Or I'm just going to leave.
Yep.
You know, she's like, I got it. I understand. So, and if she can spot it, others who would be paying attention to me, and I know nobody is, would spot it too.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, ay, ay, ay. Good for him, though. Not afraid to be embarrassed by it. Says, no, you'd all do the same exact thing if you knew how far I had to walk to go to the bathroom. So there. So I'm off to the locker room, taking a cart, sue me. But you'd all be doing the exact same thing if you were in my shoes.
That's right.
So good for him. Yeah. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. Again, more on the NFL, including the Bills' victory come from behind against the Ravens. And we'll dive into the Giants and the Cowboys, who are both 3-1 as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Thanks for joining us as we continue. Hit us up on Facebook as well, if you want to. That's Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver. So, big day in London yesterday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium between the Saints and the Vikings. What a fun ending to that one. Wake up on a Sunday morning and dive into that. So you had Will Lutz kicking a 60-yard field goal. The Dolphins come down. They kick a field goal. The Saints had a few seconds to respond. They got in a just enough field position for Lutz to try to launch a 61-yard field goal that would have tied the game and sent it into overtime. And instead, he donks it off the crossbar after making a 60-yarder the kick before. So you know what we ended up giving England? We gave them pretty much penalty kicks at the end of that game. We said, here's our version of penalty kicks. And it went off the crossbar. And so the Vikings ended up beating the Saints. Saints had to start Andy Dalton, as Jameis Winston has been dealing with injuries. And he didn't do too bad, but anyway, nevertheless, we gave London. And it was a good crowd for that game. A good crowd. That was pretty impressive. To see. I'm glad it's, you know, listen, these international games, I don't have a problem with them. I know it does take a home game away from its fans, but I don't have a problem with them. The NFL is going to do what the NFL wants to do in terms of expansion. You know, you've heard me many times if you listen to the show. I never understood the logistics of having a team in London. I don't think people thought that through whenever they would throw it out there. They just sort of thought it was like, you know, like fantasy football or video game football. We could just put a team anywhere. Logistically, it would have been really hard to have a team that far away, like one team that far away from everything else, just in terms of travel, just in terms of training camp, just in terms of, I mean, is London a good place to live if you want to lure free agents? I mean, what's the tax base like? All that kind of thing. There's a lot of other considerations then. Hey, they like it there. Put a team there. Or this, you know, there's plenty of cities in America you can move a football team to if indeed you want to move a football team. But the reality of it is that it over all of these years now that we're doing the international game, it was neat to see a pretty good stadium and a stadium where, as the announcers point out, people who get tickets, it's not like they're Saints fans or Vikings fans. They're just NFL fans, and they're showing up in different jerseys. So the two teams that, you know, were playing, but you could see a Dolphins jersey. You'd see a Steelers jersey or a Cowboys jersey or whatever. You'd see jerseys for every team that those fans particularly root for, and now they get to, you know, sort of just be part of the NFL experience. So that was kind of neat. But here in the States, we had a couple of games that really, I felt, had some meaning, even though it's very early in the season still. And in the end, I mean, you don't know what will happen in terms of injuries or how the ebb and flow of this league goes. But the Buffalo Bills, in this win against the Baltimore Ravens, you may go, well, the Bills are going to win a bunch of games this year. They're good. That was a good win. That was a good win because it was a Ravens team that came in with two sides of the coin, right? The Ravens were a team that scored a ton of points, right? They were right up there with the Bills in terms of offense, but they were also a team that were not very good defensively, right? They just struggled a bit defensively. And they weren't good at, like, they were the two best passing offenses in the league, but they weren't good, and the Ravens were like last in the pass defense. So the Ravens got out to a lead, and the Bills had to fight their way back on the road against a very good team. And they ended up doing that. Now, again, I'm not here to tell you, watch out for the Buffalo Bills. We already get that. We already know that. They're one of the top teams in the NFL. And you could make the argument they are the top team in the NFL, although Kansas City last night starting to make me think that there might be a new number one tomorrow. But we'll see. But, you know, when you're down 20-3 on the road against a team like that, that can score quickly, and they got Lamar Jackson, and he accounted for 12 touchdowns in the first 3 weeks of the season, 10 in the air and 2 on the ground, then you better start doing some things right. And the Buffalo Bills started doing things right. In fact, they shut Baltimore out in the second half of that game. And it just goes to show you that with the Bills, you are getting both. You are getting a good offense that can score and move the ball, but you're also getting a defense that's one of the tops in the league in terms of its limitations. And they held this Ravens team to 20 points all in the first half, and then after that, shut them down at home. They shut them down and then won this game on the road. Very good win for the Buffalo Bills. But I thought there were two other games that were a lot more valuable because I think in the end, both of these teams are making the playoffs. And I think the Bills, it didn't even matter if they lost. I would have still said a Buffalo Bills team at 2-2 playing 3 or 4 games on the road is still going to be an incredibly formidable opponent down the stretch. I don't think anybody would have disagreed with that. I don't think I would be breaking any new ground. But the two teams now that I am scratching my head a bit, because I'm not really sure if they're great, but they have a very, very good record. And that's the New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys. Now, the Giants and the Bears game feature two teams that can't pass the ball, right? They were two teams in the bottom part of the league in throwing the football. But they were in the tops of the league in running the football. And now Saquon Barkley is leading the league in rushing. Had 146 yards against the Bears in a 20-12 win. Daniel Jones started the game. He left the game due to an ankle injury. Tyrod Taylor came into the game, had to leave the game because of a head injury, and Daniel Jones with his ankle tape had to come back into the game. Jones had 2 rushing touchdowns. Justin Fields threw 22 times, completed just 11 passes for 176 yards. Daniel Jones and Tyrod Taylor combined for just 9 throws in this game. The Giants ran the ball 44 times and attempted 16 passes. They know exactly who they are. The Bears ran the ball 32 times and threw 22 passes. They know exactly who they are. So the Giants are 3-1, right? Now, are we talking 3-1, great 3-1, or 3-1 based on a couple of circumstances? Which is, they're 3-1 with wins against the Titans, the Panthers, and the Bears. Not exactly world beaters. With a loss to the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. But what about the Cowboys? The Cowboys are also 3-1, and Cooper Rush has now won 3 straight games. Now, I got a question for every single person that hates Dak Prescott as a quarterback, and you know who you are, right? The Dak Prescott is a B-minus quarterback, or I listed my top 10 quarterbacks in the league, and he's not on the list, or I ranked Dak Prescott 45th of all the quarterbacks in the league, and there are only 32 teams. Guys like that. Would you just go, sorry, you got your job this way, and now Cooper Rush is getting his job this way? Because I don't think that's going to happen at all. Cooper Rush, 223 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, and an easy win against Washington. But Dak Prescott makes that offense even more electric when he's on. The Cooper Rush train is a very, very good story, but let's not get way ahead of ourselves. The wake-up call continues.
Wake-up call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Sports Map Radio, week number four in the NFL. Wrapping up tonight with the San Francisco 49ers and the LA Rams as a rematch of last year's NFC Championship game. Okay, last night was a rematch of Super Bowl 55, Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. That game just did not live up to, I'm sorry, I wish it did, but it didn't. It didn't live up to the sort of hype that I thought. You know, Brady, they tried to come back a little bit, but nah. That game was done pretty quickly. Good to see Kansas City erase the demons of Raymond James Stadium. Patrick Mahomes was like, yeah, the last time I was here, I didn't score any touchdowns, so if you don't mind, I'm going to score a lot of them, if that's okay with you. I'll throw for three. We'll get a couple on the ground.
And I'll leave you one that you all will still be talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
One throw that we'll all be talking about. Because I'll never forget that horizontal throw.
Well, it's so, like I was saying earlier this morning, he is doing things that we've seen in some form, and yet we're still blown away when he does it.
Yeah.
He threw this, so this little thing he did where he flipped the ball, like the ball was at the, what, 1 yard line, 2 yard line?
Yeah.
And then he rolls out to like the 11, maybe, I think it was further back. I think it was like to the 15. He rolls out to like the 15 and then just has all of this room to run. And you almost forget like the line of scrimmage is at like the 2. And then he flips it into the end zone, just quickly flips it to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And you're like, he did that in the Super Bowl. Right, but in the end, at the Super Bowl, he couldn't get it into the end zone. But he did that. He does this thing where he takes to throw a 2 yard pass, takes 25 yards of running or 30 yards of running. That's why he ran for 500 yards in the Super Bowl, but it was just scrambling. It wasn't like real yards. It was like people had to watch the tape and calculate how much yards he ran,
yeah, side to
as
side.
He was being pursued side to side in that entire game against the Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55. And he did the same thing here. He backed up to like the 16-yard line and then ran 14 yards to flip a 2-yard touchdown pass. It was remarkable. And yet he does it all the time. He's getting sacked as he's going down.
And even,
he throws a ball in the air. It's complete. We see it all the time with him.
And even when he was running up, it wasn't like he was – I couldn't tell if he was hungry for the touchdown. Like, you see a lot of guys, like, you name any other quarterback, they're tucking that ball and they're going for it.
Right.
And he just has that presence of mind, like, well, if I get in, I get in. If I don't, I don't. You know, I'm fine. I'm still waiting for my guys to get open. And it totally looks like backyard football.
Look, and he's a smart guy, right? He knows the league. He knows what's important in this league. And he knows that when he watches the film of Super Bowl 55, and again, there's different personnel and everything, but he knows how they gave up an opportunity. They weren't the offense that they were going into that game. The Buccaneers did a magnificent job defensively, and he probably wishes he had that one back, right? Didn't, you know, kept us to 3 field goals. So to go there and just be like, we're scoring 41 points against that Buccaneers defense that was giving up 9 a game. 9 a game in the first 3 weeks of the season. He overwhelmed them. I absolutely overwhelmed them. And it was a real sight. Now again, Brady threw 3 touchdowns, but all of it was when you're down 28-10, right? Real 20 it was 21-3 at one point. You're down 21-10 to the Kansas City Chiefs. You're not really going to climb back into that game because you can score, but you better find a way to stop them. And finding a way to stop them is very difficult when he's rolling. That's the one thing about him that I will say. The surprising part of his career, when you look at there are 2 games that I think really blow you away because they're so unconventional. It wasn't losing to the Patriots in the AFC title game in his first full year as a starter. Patriots were, they were Brady, they were great. And it wasn't it was 2 games. It was the Super Bowl loss to the Buccaneers, where that machine was held to 3 field goals. But it was also the game against Cincinnati because they had a lead at home. Everything was clicking. And then the Bengals make an adjustment, and then they get shut down completely. And that's not something you see this team do on a regular basis. They're going to lose games, of course, during the regular season where you're like, oh, Patrick Mahomes wasn't Patrick Mahomes. That's happened. That happens all the time because that is something that you just can't keep up all the time. But in the big moments, the big stage, these two games stand out because it's not something that they do very often. They don't get shut out of touchdowns, and they don't get shut down in the second half at home when they are rolling along offensively. The one thing about the Indianapolis Colts game was that they struggled pretty much the whole game. They didn't get out to a big lead and then fall apart. They were kind of in this battle with the Colts where it just wasn't quite working right. They made some decisions on special teams that didn't work out. They muffed a punt. They went for a fake field goal that was properly read and defended. There were just different things that sort of allowed the Colts to stay in the game. And remember, the Colts went on like a 9-minute drive at the end of that game, 16 plays to score the go-ahead touchdown. That's keeping the offense off the field. Last night was like, once you see them get to a 28-10 lead, even with Brady, you're like, but the defense hasn't shown that they can stop anything that the Chiefs are going at them. So even if Brady scores and keeps scoring and keeps scoring, you're going to have to get them to punt. And he's moving the ball up and down the field. At 21-10, they still had three more scoring drives in the second half. And they were up 38-17. So it was a very, very impressive win. Look, the Bills and the Chiefs are going to be vying for top five, throughout the season, and both had excellent wins on the road. Excellent wins on the road yesterday. I thought that win against for the Buffalo Bills, trailing on the road against the Ravens, was good. But I think the Chiefs was. We kind of wonder if there's something iffy about the Buccaneers. That offensively they weren't looking all that great. Defensively they were strong, but offensively they weren't looking all that awesome. But injuries played a part. The suspension of Mike Evans played a part, coupled with the injuries. But that was a great win last night for Kansas City. Great win. But Philadelphia, that was again a win against the Jacksonville team that's better than we think, right? It wasn't just old heroes, same old Jacksonville. That's a Jacksonville team that got out to a 14-0 lead and then couldn't hold on to that. And of course, the Steelers lose to the Jets. Chargers won though. Good for them. Beat the Houston Texans. I feel bad for the Houston Texans. Is that the wrong thing to say about a professional football team? Like, there's nothing there. They're trying, but they don't have anything.
No, I don't think it's wrong. I don't want to feel bad.
They have Damian Pierce. I mean, that's good.
Damian Pierce, but you know, a lot of it was coaching yesterday. I mean, I was watching that game. There was one play in particular that just sticks out in my mind, and the Texans had. It was fourth and something, fourth and one, fourth and two, and they were going. No, it was third and one, third and two, something like that. And they were going for it. And for whatever reason, they lined up. They decided not to block Khalil Mack.
Why would you do that?
And I mean, I don't know if it was a misassignment or something.
Khalil Mack must have been a misassignment.
He is just standing, but he's on the line. The right tackle doesn't even make a move for him. Takes the guy that's more inside of him. What's his name? Davis Mills was just a said duck.
Yeah.
He got like three, four steps back. Khalil Mack is right there in his face. And that's when you look at it. I think it was a fourth down play. Like, they were trying to go for it on a fourth down play and just immediately turned over the ball right before the half.
The thing is, Davis Mills throws a good ball.
He does.
He can throw a good ball.
He was making me mad yesterday because he and Brandon Cooks were a dynamic duo for a little bit.
The one throw he did have where he just threaded it down the middle as Cooks was cutting into the end zone, that was a beautiful throw.
Yeah.
Beautiful throw.
It was
all right. Listen, I'm glad the Chargers started Justin Herbert if he's fine.
But
still, be careful. Be careful. This league, I'm telling you, and this is not it because he had a different injury, but did you see how many people left for concussions yesterday?
Yep.
So much so that when Cameron Brate of the Buccaneers looked woozy and went back into the game and then was taken out of the game and social media jumped all over it, like the NFL is now waking. I bet there was a memo this week saying, you better watch for this.
Well, the doctor
got
fired.
We are not messing around. We fired the independent neurologist.
Yep.
We're done with that. Guys, we're not messing around here. Like, we just got absolutely toasted on national television.
Because we all know.
Friday morning, our league got destroyed.
Because we weren't blind from the Sunday before when you came back and told us it was a back injury. And it was like, really?
And the thing about the league is, the league can come down because the league is not in charge of these things. It's not a league decision. It's not coming from New York. Like, you don't have to get permission from the head office to take a guy out. The league, I mean, think about it this way. Think about, like, if you own a fast food restaurant, right, and then you go, you know what? We're getting rid of the super burger, and we're putting in a different type of chicken sandwich, and I don't want French fries. I'm going to serve tater tots. And the big corporation comes in and goes, no. That's not how we do things. No. You're not getting rid of the super burger, and you're not getting rid of the French fries, right? You don't blame the corporation for a decision made by one independent franchise owner. Right. You have to say to the independent franchise owner, get your act together. It's the same thing here. All of these teams have a built-in infrastructure where they run themselves. And then the league has to step in and go, hey, you failed in this, 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 and this. Right. Maybe your field wasn't adequately prepared enough. Maybe you didn't do this in preparation or you did this. We monitored that and we will fine you for this, this, and this. So you know the league, after what the Dolphins did, said you better get something in the media that is positive about the direction you're going with your players when it comes to head injuries. Because we bought into the back thing. All right, now we're not in Miami monitoring you, so we trust you on this. And so we looked at it and we went, holy cow. And you said, no, it was a back issue. His back clenched up. And you had all of these people backing you, the independent doctors that saw that, and do something. Because what happened on Thursday night can't happen again. We are the most popular sport in this country by 100 miles, but our conversations on Fridays around the country are not going to be that we lost the life of a player because we were careless. If anything happened to Tua Tagovailoa on that field, if he never walked again, if he didn't survive any of those things, and that's the legacy of this organization, is that you guys thought it was a back injury when it was his second concussion in 4 days, you better be doing something. And they did. They fired the guy.
Their doctor.
They fired the doctor.
Yep.
And this is
and the we still don't know of how bad it was for Tua. I mean,
right.
I know he was released from a hospital in Cincinnati, but, I mean, I haven't heard a timetable of him coming back yet.
Well, that was a funny thing, right? They were talking about the backup quarterback, and they were like, if Tua Tagovailoa can't play, and then people were like, what do you mean if? Like, what do you
right.
mean? Like, he's not playing this weekend. What are you talking about if? Like, the guy left on a stretcher, right? He's not playing this weekend.
I don't care if you guys were laughing watching a movie.
You can pretty much make a safe assessment on that one. Like, imagine if he did play, like if he did start. God, people
this
lose
league,
their mind.
With this league, though, I could see it happening. That's the problem.
No. See, I disagree.
You think they're going to hold him back?
No, I do. I do. And I'm telling you why. Because this league, they cannot take two steps backwards in this. For the Dolphins, they're going to tell the Dolphins the league is going to step in again. It's the franchise owner versus the corporation, right? It's McDonald's corporate versus Joe Smith, who owns two of them in your small town. That's what this is. The Dolphins are going. The league is going to come in and go, here's the last thing we need. Okay, we don't look. It's not me getting on the radio and talking about this. It is every player that has ever played in the league talking about it. It is coaches currently in the league talking about it, right? When you have the Ravens, the Lions, the Vikings, like you have had coaches publicly stating how shocked they were that Tua Tagovailoa started in that game against the Bengals. When you have active coaches saying, I don't know what's going on there, the league steps in and goes, we're locking this down completely. Locking it down completely. Because what they want is, they wanted the conversation on Friday morning to be, how good are the Bengals? How good are the Dolphins? How good is it Joe Burrow? They wanted that. They did not want every talk show in America to be talking about concussions and the failure of this league to address one of the most significant health hazards the league has ever seen. Where you had a congressional committee look into it to see if the league was doing everything possible. So that's why I say I disagree. I think the league would come in and go, no, we're telling you he's not playing. He is in the, we have a protocol for a reason. He is not going to play, no matter how many days between the Thursday night game and your Sunday game. He is not playing with two head injuries and leaving on a stretcher. I don't care what the medical reports say. The optics would be horrific because, again, look at Brian Hoyer. Brian Hoyer hasn't played in a while. He got into the game against the Packers. Bam, concussion. Bye-bye. See you later. Tyrod Taylor, right, goes into the game for Daniel Jones. Boom, head injury. Bye-bye. What do you think will happen to Tua Tagovailoa if he gets a third one? They're going to take the franchise away from Stephen Ross if he does that. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So I got a quick question about Tua Tagovailoa. So because they fired the neurotrauma consultant, based on the findings of the NFLPA, is it now fact that he suffered a head injury against the Bills rather than us seeing a video and just going, he must have?
Do you think they would ever admit it if it was?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, I almost feel like
we all watch the video and go, he suffered a head injury. But yeah. Remember, the neuro drama consultant said, nope, it was a back issue. He's all clear. He didn't have a concussion. But now that they went into the findings and then they fired the guy, do we go, no, he was wrong. He had a concussion and he misdiagnosed it. Is that sort of the standard fact now? Because this would be 2 in 4 days by fact. And I think it would put him in a protocol situation where
I feel like it'd be easier to get the answer out of how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop
probably than get the official version. So